podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Well, hello, good evening and welcome. And welcome to Mall Over Podcast, something to do with the Southwest and rugby. Russ usually does that bit. He's not here. It's me, it's Ben. I'm presenting tonight, so this could be a shambles. And Phil is currently in Cape Town, which means it's just me and the Lensman tonight. So Doug's here.
Evening, hello, mate. Hello. And for any one of our regular listeners that feels the need to ask why they haven't been invited, it's because we couldn't be fucked to be organised.
Yeah, we've pretty much knocked this together in about an hour. So we couldn't be bothered getting hold of any of you, really. So in terms of what we're going to do today, we decided to reach back into the archives and look at a classic, which was the Amaga Line episode, where Doug and Russ went through the fly halves in the league using a player as the bang average mark. So we're going to do that again. And because I've been put in charge, we're going to do fullbacks. And we're going to work through the fullbacks in the league. And we'd like to think we've got a structure, but it will pretty soon break the structure, I think. And we have set the line. Well, I had one player in mind and Doug had another. And on my list, they're right next to each other. So in true 1920s diplomacy style, we're going to call it the Hammersley Furbank line.
Hammersley Furbank. That sounds like a Magic Circle law firm.
Yes, for sure. Yeah, like a Victorian novel with two magicians. So Doug,
we're thinking a bit of background on why we've chosen fullbacks, Ben, and why you think that it's the most interesting position to judge.
Well, I think, yeah. So there's a practical reason in terms of prep and just brevity of the podcast, in that you can only play one fullback at once. So they tends to be less in a squad. So a bit like fly halves or scrum halves, you can get through it a little bit quicker. But also it's where I've pretty much always played. So it's a position that hopefully we might talk a bit of sense about. And also, you know, it's part of the spine of the team. And there's a lot of different skills involved at fullback where you can kind of also, you know, compare players against each other in different ways. So some are more attacking, some are more defensive, some are better kickers, some are better runners. And I think it's an interesting contrast between some of these players as well that we can look at. Probably you'll find my bias will go towards the more solid and dependable fullbacks, whereas I should think Doug might have a bit more of an attacking bias going on. But we'll see as we go along. Anything you want to add to that, mate?
Well, I think the hardest thing to judge these fullbacks by nowadays is the fact that it doesn't seem to be that a lot of coaches actually put stock in having a specialist. It seems to be de rigueur at the moment to pick multifaceted skill set players. And a bit like, I think it's a bit like a wicket keeper in cricket, in that a really good fullback can save you points and make you points, as a really good wicket keeper can save runs and take wickets. But you can have someone in there that's average that will just do a job. And really, you can get away with it, except in glaring instances, which is why Daly played there for a long time, because teams wanted him on the field because of his skill set, not necessarily because of his skill set at that position.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely right, Doug. You've put that a lot better than I ever could. Yeah, I think it is a position that players are you can fill in, and a lot of teams are doing it, because once you get past around the 13 starters and probably about seven more, you are then looking at teams where they're putting either a utility back or perhaps a fly half in at fullback, certainly as their second choice. Players that I haven't put in my list that could easily play fullback is someone like Noel, or maybe Maitland at Saracens. Yeah. But I don't think you would class either of those as fullbacks. You could easily see Dan Bigger doing a really good job at fullback as well. But, you know, I think we've seen from the Six Nations that having a specialist there does help. I also think, I was thinking about this as we made the list, it's not a position where, if you look back through England's history, where you would say they've had a huge number of sort of absolute top-class fullbacks over the years. If you looked at, you know, Wales, you could draw a straight line back from Liam Williams through Halfpenny, perhaps almost all the way back to JPR Williams, where, you know, they would have an outstanding player there all the time. Whereas I think England have made do a few times over the last few years. And, you know, even the World Cup side, you had two players who could interchange between the wing and at fullback. So it is interesting that maybe England haven't had as many as, say, Australia or South Africa have over the years, but maybe we've got a couple on this list. So Doug, I've got Hammersley at number 14, and I've got Furbank at number 15. So
3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. Well, you've obviously got more than me because I've got Furbank Hammersley as 12, 13.
Okay, so actually we're pretty close there, aren't we?
Yeah.
So below there, I've got what I would say are quite a few youngsters where we've probably perhaps not got enough evidence, or certainly I haven't seen enough of them to sort of judge. So I've got the likes of Hodge from Exeter, Arundel from London Irish, and then Heward and Penny from Newcastle and Worcester. I've seen Hodge quite a bit, and I think he's definitely a work in progress. But he does have a good step, and he's going to be a good attacking player. But at the moment, I think, you know, he's definitely in the sort of lower half of our table. Arundel, yeah. I've only really seen him against, you know, age group opposition where he's looked really good. But a few of the bits of feedback I've got on him is perhaps he's not the best defender as yet. Have you seen much of either of those, Doug?
I've seen a bit of Hodge. I was working on the under 20s. I think he was in the last year that Sky had the under 20s. He was the fullback, and I mean, he's grown a little bit since then. But he, say what you like, if you've got Ben Earl running, or you know, if somebody makes a line break and Hodge is your last line of defence, he's going to get trucked, isn't he? He's going to get blown away. It depends what you want from your fullback, because I equally saw him play for Exeter against Saints, and he made some amazing breaks and did some really good stuff, scored a brilliant try. So I guess it depends what you want from your fullback. I'm not convinced about him in the air either. I think in competitions for the air, just his size goes against him, because he doesn't have a commanding presence. As some of the players will come on to later,
he's quite lightweight, isn't he?
Yeah.
So I think, you know, those youngsters, they're in a position where they could easily sort of move up the, you know, our league table and become, you know, much, much higher rated. And there's a lot of promise in a lot of them. We spoke about the sort of utility, or, you know, or the backs that can fill in at fullback. And I think if you're looking at, I mean, it won't be a spoiler to suggest that Leicester and Bristol are probably their first choices and near the top of both our lists. But, you know, once those players aren't playing, you know, both teams are kind of filling in a little bit, aren't they? You've got Leicester might use Burns or Hegarty. Bristol might use maybe Lloyd or Morahan or someone like that. And I think they've
used Sheedy as well this year, haven't they?
Yeah, I think they probably have. And I think, you know, that is quite a drop down in either case, isn't it? And,
you're doing what we spoke about earlier, in that you're...
Yeah.
It's that old conversation that we had about 500 times when we talk about Eddie Jones's selections, in that you're weakening two positions to shoehorn a player you like into a squad.
Yeah.
Which I think any number of Premiership teams are guilty of doing at this position.
Yeah, I think so. And you know, part of that is probably down to budgets where they're, you know, trying to make do. And, you know, if you are paying Charles Piatow, you want to play him at fullback as often as he can, I'd imagine.
As often as his body will allow.
Exactly. So we've mentioned Furbank, Doug.
Yeah.
So Saints have got two fullbacks who, as far as I can see, fairly similar in style. You've got Furbank and Freeman.
Yeah, very, they're very Chris Boyd players.
Yes, they're more of the winger side of fullback, aren't they? I think both of them.
Well, actually, do you know what? I think that Tommy Freeman isn't far away from being a complete article. I think if he had a bit more experience, if he had a couple more years under his belt, or at least one more season under his belt, I'd say he'd be knocking on the door. He got injured at the beginning of the season when he started the season like a train. Got injured and he's just coming back now. I'd say that in him and Stewart, with the future at fullback is very, very secure for England. I mean, interestingly, they both come from Leicester, and we picked Freeman up from Leicester when they released him, and you can see why they released him. You know, both players would have wanted to play rugby, and
yeah,
they put their eggs in one basket, and Saints benefited from the other. So, I'm more of a Freeman fan than a Furbank fan. I just think he offers more. He's better defensively, in my opinion. He has more about him attacking as well. And I think that's ultimately, he's just not quite as big as Stewart, but ultimately I think there will be a conversation about who should be in that shirt. And the argument will be about, well, Stewart does X and Freeman does Y. I just don't think he's quite there yet.
No. So really, Doug, you've answered my question. My question was going to be, which one would you fall on the side of? But you've already said,
well,
that.
Yeah, because,
I'm assuming,
I mean,
you're...
Furbank's blunted by the fact that he's, you know, what is he now? Is he a 10? Is he a, he's played on a bloody wing. He's played at fullback. Yeah, I've seen him. I've seen him in the centres at Saints.
Yeah, for sure. I'm assuming you're not going to throw me a curveball and say you're still a Tuala man.
No, he's there's only one player below him in my list, and that would be Jacob Umanga.
Yeah.
The worst player in the Premiership.
Well, there is a colour truly nailed to a mast there. I think I'm with you. I think Freeman, I've not seen as much of him as Furbank, but I think he does look a little bit more solid. Most of the games I've seen him, he's been on the wing, but you know, he's shown up well there. Furbank, you know, obviously you don't get the full view of him from those two England performances that spring to mind against France, but what concerned me in those games was how far away from the ball he was with the ones he missed. You know those volleys look good on a highlight reel, but that was because he was nowhere near catching them. Yeah. So I think I'm with you there. I think Freeman is the pick of the two. So actually that perhaps gives us our structure. So I've got Freeman as my number 11.
Okay.
So should we work through our top 10s?
I've got Freeman slightly higher than you.
Okay.
Yeah.
If
we go through top 10s, that makes sense.
Yeah. So my 10 is a little bit of a throwback, and it's probably a year out of date, but I've still got Mike Brown there.
I'm quite much higher.
Yeah, I think he's definitely past his best, but he's a solid, you know, he's a solid fullback. He's still competitive as anything, and you know, under a high ball, for a long time he was the best English fullback under a high ball. I think he was always a bit underrated in attack. He's not the quickest, but he used to pop up for his fair share of tries.
So often, didn't he? That was his.
Yeah, he did. Yeah. He was good at staying on his feet, but he was perhaps almost, you know, perhaps his aggression got the better of him at times, and he would maybe, like you say, run into dead ends. So you've got him higher as well, Doug, have you? So you've got him...
I've got him at 7.
Okay.
Which...
Who's your 10 then?
Piatel.
Piatel at 10.
Yeah, okay. I can tell reaction that you're not all right with that.
Yeah, is that a value for money pick?
But it's a value for money thing, and also... I'm just not convinced by him. I'm just not convinced. I think he, again, loves running into corners. He gives away a lot of penalties. In the games I've watched, he gives away a ton of penalties. He knocks the ball on a lot. And yeah, I don't think he's on the pitch enough to be anywhere near the top of the list. And he must be costing an absolute arse ton of money.
Yeah, I mean, he definitely is, isn't he? I mean, he was the sort of poster boy for a very expensive Bristol player until Rodrada came and took the crown, wasn't he?
Yeah.
I have got him higher just on pure ability. I've got him much higher to that.
What's the best ability, Ben?
Availability,
mate.
Yeah, that is an NFL drafter cliche if ever I've heard one. So, I take all your points aboard, and I think when you and Russ did this with Fly Halves, you definitely took the sort of value for money and the players being away for international duty as part of the process, didn't you?
Yeah.
I've got him higher just because, you know, of what he can do and, you know, ball in hand, he's on this list. He's the by far the most talented, I think. So for that reason, I have put him a little bit higher. So my number 9, I've got Dolly Parton from London Irish.
Again, I think you've shat the bed there. That I think you've got a bit low on that one.
You've got him higher, would you?
Come at this from different directions.
Yeah, yeah. So my reasoning on that is whenever I've seen him, I've been really impressed, but I haven't seen enough of him.
Right.
But what I've seen of him compared to Hodge has been really positive. So I've got him up there. He's another one with sort of room to rise. So, Doug, you rate Parton.
Definitely. He reminds me of a lot of Stuart Hogg, the way Hogg played in his prime.
Mm.
He's got that sort of quick twitch, getting into gaps, finding, you know, running laterally and then hitting a hole really quickly, a bit like an NFL running back.
Yeah.
He's solid under the high ball, but he's also got... He's a really good distributor. So quite often he'll pop up on a line in the centres and link play to the outside. And he's got a solid kicking game and he works really hard as well. So, yeah, I think he's, again, another player that is probably unfortunate to not be mentioned more in England. I think there's a lot of those London Irish players that are a bit unfancied, really. But
I think that's fair. He's
a great player in my book.
And that back three with... Hassel Collins and Loader is dangerous, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely.
And I think that the point you raised there is perhaps another reason why there's fewer fullbacks than perhaps you might think is that a lot of teams like them to come in as a distributor. You know, in the way that you know, Goode used to do for Saracens a lot, and you know, sometimes they'll sacrifice the old sort of classic skills and have a distributor in, which again is a reason for Daly playing so often for England at fullback.
Yeah.
I actually had
Parton at number 4.
Did you? Okay. Yeah. So you've got him high. I mean, I think that is...
Don't forget, he's always available.
Yeah.
So
I mean, looking, I think that's...
if you're looking to start a team, you want someone that's just below England level, and that's him to a T, really. He's mentioned in the England setup, but never quite gets there, and is free for every game, basically.
Yeah, I think that's absolutely fair. And you know, like I say, he's definitely going to be a one that might go up the list a little bit. I'm sure all these fullbacks are listening intently to find out where they are on the list and where we think they're going to go as well.
If they find themselves too low on the list, they should bloody work harder.
Exactly. Yeah. Train harder.
Yeah. Be better if you want to be higher on my list.
Yeah. If you want to impress us two no-hopers, you better get some extra hours in. All right. So, okay. 8 o'clock. 8 o'clock. Number eight. I've gone similar, really. A younger player who, you know, is coming through. He's playing pretty regularly. Whenever I've seen him, he's made ground. It's Luke James, Sale.
Okay. I had him quite a long way down the list.
Okay.
Well, I'll say a long way down the list. I had him below Hammersley and Furbank, so he was 13. Okay.
I think, yeah, Hammersley would be, he would have been first choice at the start of the season, wouldn't he? I think Hammersley is one of those players that looks like he should be terrible, but is actually pretty good.
I think it's because of his haircut.
He could well be.
Genuinely, I think his haircut just makes him look shit. Yeah, haircuts are, you don't even have to train better.
Yeah, and he's quite sort of willowy, isn't he? And but actually, he's pretty effective. He's pretty decent under a high ball. Runs the ball well. You know, I had him in the middle just because he's pretty good at everything, but he's probably not outstanding at anything either. Yeah. I like James. You know, whenever I've seen him play, he's probably been one of the sparks for Sale. You know, if you take out the two very expensive internationals they've got in the backs, he probably is the one that makes the most happen. I have seen him perhaps run down a few blind alleys a few too many times, but he's another one I think might have, you know, potential to grow a little bit. So you've got him a lot lower, Doug.
Yeah, just because, well, A, I haven't seen enough of him. B, he's second choice at his club. Or I perceive him to be second choice at his club. Whether or not he is up for debate. And you can't have the second choice above the first choice, and the second choice, and the first choice is 11th. So, or 12th, sorry, behind Furbank. So,
yeah.
That's just, he's a victim of circumstance in that regard. Probably if he became first choice, he'd move above, he'd maybe crack the top 10. There's some good players in that top 10, though.
There is. And I think what we'll do is we'll run through my 10, because I'd imagine we'll probably be roughly the same. And then any that I've missed, you can put me right. And we'll probably have talked long enough about fullbacks then for anybody.
For anybody.
Really? Yeah. I'm probably talking about fullbacks, I'm probably the limit. So if I'm bored, we'll have to stop.
Well, we've got the hour for you on... Freddie Stewart to come, haven't we? So
yeah, exactly. Yeah. So there'll be no surprise that he's in the top 10. So I have a feeling my next four or five will disagree with yours a little bit, because they're going to fail the value for money test, I think.
Okay. Yeah.
Well,
So
seven, I've got Max Malins.
Well, again, second choice fullback at his club. Can't put him above the first choice. And if I put him above the first choice, it'd be number one. So there you go. He's an absolute Rolls Royce of a player. Yeah. I can't find the video where I said before the last Lions tour it was. And we all said if we could have one player from a squad to improve the team we supported, who would it be? And I picked Max Malins for Northampton. And he's just different class wherever he plays. He seems to, nothing seems to faze him. Nothing, you know, he seems like the perfect player to have in a team. Max, I need you to play outside centre today. Okay, boss.
Yeah.
Yep, I'll play there. Not only am I going to play there, I'm probably going to be the best outside centre on the pitch. Yeah, so that's the kind of player he is.
I think when he played at fullback for England, which was probably only a game and a bit, but he looked pretty good. He was decent under the high ball, not perfect, but decent. And when he's played on the wing for England, he's done pretty well in the fullback type, chasing kicks, catching high balls. His defense is pretty good as well. And I agree with you, like as a rugby player, he's really high up on the list. For completeness, I've got Daly down at 13. So of the two sort of Saracens players that could fill in at fullback, I've got him higher. I really rate Daly as a rugby player as well, but I just don't think he is a fullback. Obviously in a Premiership game against maybe the lower half of the league, he's going to fill in there.
Conversation has been had enough that we don't need to go over that.
Yeah, quite right. So I've got Malins at 7. Then at number 6, I have got a player that if he gets a new contract somewhere, will probably be on about £100,000 a game because he plays so few games. I've got Anthony Watson.
At what place, sorry?
6.
Okay, I've got him at 8 because of his availability.
Yeah. To me, until Stewart came through, I think Watson was the best bet for England at fullback. He's not perfect under the high ball, and sometimes perhaps his positioning can be a little bit off, but a loose kick in Anthony Watson's hands is danger. He's perhaps the most electric player on this list. And some run backs he's done have been fantastic. I think you're absolutely right. You know, availability wise for a club, he's injury prone now. And also if he's not injured, he could well be playing for England. And the other thing that counts against him is he's such a fantastic winger that you could easily play him on the wing and play someone else at fullback and, get just as much out of him.
Yeah, I mean, you've summed it up, all of it up there. You have to question, though, why Bath would renew his contract when they've got Phil de Glanville there, that, you know, value for money, pick up somebody else, develop somebody else, save yourself a couple of $100,000, get a South African prop, build the squad.
Yeah.
Or have Watson, who might be available. Because if he is free and he goes injury-free, he's going to be picked for England, so he's not going to be available. So you're probably only going to get 10 games out of him. And the problem Bath have is that when he is fit, it's normally coincides with England duty, and he comes back from England duty knackered, doesn't play for Bath, gets fit, plays well 2 games for Bath, then gets picked for England again. So their squad building sort of ethos is completely out of whack with where the league's heading. I think they've got to address that, but that's a different kettle of fish.
Well, there's talk of him going to Leicester, isn't there?
Have they not confirmed that he's staying?
I know they've confirmed a few. I know they've confirmed Joseph, right. But it would, you know, either move would make sense. You know, staying at Bath.
The problem that the RFU are going to have soon is that a lot of these players are going to realise that they can make their England money in France and not have to work with Eddie Jones. If I was any one of these players that are being sort of handcuffed to an English team contract because they're in the England setup, I'd basically be doing what Mercer's done, because he's thought, well, screw it. If I get picked for England 6-7 times, I can make that money going to play in France. And to me, that would be the best bet for Watson, go and play in France. I think if a lot of players just decided we're just going to go and do it and put the RFU in a position where they have to think about, well, we need to think about this playing in England to be picked for England thing, I think they'd force the hand of the RFU and a lot of players would make a lot more money than they're making.
Well, I think there's probably quite a few England players, perhaps of Watson's age, where it won't be long before something like that happens. Whether they all sort of hold out for the next World Cup, maybe, I don't know. But you know, that probably that whole back line of 5 years ago is probably perhaps take the Saracens players out of that, and they're probably all working their way towards that eventually.
Yeah. So I think that, sorry, we're digressing, but you know, the RPA have to stand up for their players more. And I think that this whole England players have got to live and work in England is a labour issue that I think if the RPA chose to fight it, they could make their members a lot of money. But they seem to be a body that exists for PR and likes rather than the actual benefit of their players. Anyway, rant over.
Yeah. So back to the list. Right, at five, I've got a player who is in decline, I think, and hasn't, to me, really set the world on fire at Exeter, and that's Stuart Hogg. I think he definitely failed the value for money option, but you know, he's got a lot of credit in the bank in terms of ability. And, you know, on his day, he is, you know, real danger, as you've already said. I think Exeter probably got hold of him in the hope that the little bit of stardust he could provide would get them further in Europe. And
well, they won the double.
Yeah, I was going to say, you have to say that's worked. But I just, you know, I think, you know, he is a star, but he's starting to get a little bit tarnished now. I think someone said a couple of weeks ago, maybe his pace has just dropped a little bit. He was always good under the high ball without being...
What you've got perfect. To ask is his drop in pace linked to his gain in hairline?
Yes.
Because they seem to be less aerodynamic.
Yeah, exactly. So you know, I've got him this high, just, you know, what can only be described as a world-class player, but... You know, I have, not to the degree perhaps that you and Russ did in the last time, but I've given it a bit of a value for money sort of shake up as well. And also, I've never been as big a fan as some others have been of Hogg. I think he's a very good player, but he never started for very rarely started for the Lions in tests, and I think that says a little bit.
I think that the last three Lions tours will be judged pretty harshly in 50 years, if rugby's still a thing.
Which it may not be.
Well, quite. I don't think you can judge. A lot of players should have got Lions caps that didn't. Dylan Hartley, for one, when they called up Christian Dacey instead of Dylan Hartley, which was an absolute atrocity. But... yeah, I think I think Hogg. I mean, Liam Williams is an exceptional player, but you know, Hoggy is every bit, or was every bit as good. I'm not sure he still is.
No, I think Williams was a very Gatland selection, picking him over Hogg. I think they were very close in ability. But Williams was better at the defensive aspect. He was a better
well, Williams is from Wales. I think that's the end.
And I think he was probably slightly better under the high ball as well. And as you say, he was Welsh, so that was perhaps the deciding vote. Yeah. But you know, Exeter. Well, you've said it. They've had a lot of success with him, so you can't write that off as a sign in. My number four, from a little throwaway comment you made earlier, I think you might have him at two. Alex Goode?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm yet to be convinced that there's a better player that's been... Well, I'm not convinced he's still not the best fullback we've got. And I include Stuart in that. But I don't think there's ever been a player that's been treated as badly by England as Alex Good.
I think he is an excellent player. He could well be the cleverest player on this list. You know, he can easily, he's a fullback for sure, but he could do a job at 10, or, and he does do a job at 10 if you need him. Positioning's great. Makes a lot of tries. Really good footwork in closed spaces, and probably one of the most decorated rugby players of all time at club level. Yeah, Jones gave him one game against Fiji, didn't he? And yeah. I think he dropped a ball after probably 5 minutes, and that was it. He just kind of wrote him off. I think one of the best performances I've seen by an England fullback was Good in Dublin in a Hurricane, probably about, I don't know, 8 or 9 years ago.
Right.
He didn't drop a thing. It was you know, like a 12-9 game, you know. And he was absolutely fantastic that day. So there is not a lot wrong with his ability under pressure and you know, in the tough conditions and you know, with the ball in the air. But I think he got a reputation for it. He might not dominate the space. You know, we said before about the very best at that do sort of dominate the space, whereas I think Good, being slightly smaller, maybe doesn't do that as much. But his hands were so good, he could usually get away with it. Mm. That'd be my sort of summary of that. So yeah, I'm really high on him as well. Have you got anything else you want to add to that, or have I gone?
No, I just, you know, that I can't see how there are two or even three better fullbacks than him in England at the moment, and it goes back to Jones. He makes this thing about saying that players have got to be in their cycle. They've got to be. He wants a young squad, but then he picks Joe Marler every bloody week. So what's the excuse for not picking the most consistently good fullback in the Premiership for the last decade, probably? Even when he was picking Mike Brown, it should have been Alex Good. I just don't get it. I probably never will.
I think we promised not to talk about Daly, but I think, you know, picking Daly there was almost a sort of attempt to find a Good kind of player that wasn't Good.
Mm.
Because Good's got a very good kicking game, a smart kicking game, which, to be fair, Daly does as well. But, you know, Good can fill in at 10, you know, or become a second receiver. That's what he was looking for when he picked Daly. And yeah. But Good, even when they were at the same club, Good was the one being picked in the big games to do it at fullback, unless Farrell was injured and they needed a 10. So, yeah, totally agree. Absolutely outstanding player. We've already covered number three. I've got Pierre Tau there. So,
I've got Tyrone Green.
Okay, so I've got Green lower than that. I've got him out of the top 10 at 12. And we're going to have to speak about him, or Eddie will have a fit.
Yeah.
And Eddie's probably already warming up the response podcast to this. I've got him lower, purely based on some games last season where Quinn's won games, but they were winning them quite in shootouts. There was one against Bath and a couple more around the end of the season. And he got exposed a little bit in defence. I think, you know, Eddie's right, and you'll probably agree with him, that in attack with the ball in hand, he is brilliant. You know, he's really fast and does, you know, score some fantastic tries and create a lot. I've just, you know, worry about him defensively. Contested balls in the air, he's usually pretty good. It's almost the easier ones he drops sometimes. And, you know, he's a very successful player in a very successful team. And I haven't got him, you know, miles down the list. I've just got him a spot below Freeman, who we've already said is a potential England international. you know, for a long time to come. But yeah, I am dropping him down there. But you're going to disagree.
Well, yeah, again, availability. And he complements, I think, the other two Quinn's back three players in that he's a bit of a harder runner than either of them with the ball. And his support lines to those players seem to... There's a lot of tries that seem to be Green to Murley or Murley to Green or... the other, you know, the other way around. I think as part of a back three, he works, you know, he links the back three quite well. There are obviously defensive liabilities, but he's available every game, and that makes up for a lot of fallibilities in my book.
That's quite an interesting back three, isn't it? If you pick Murley and Liner as your wingers, that's two pretty big wingers with a smaller fullback, which is not something you see all the time. Usually you have a bigger winger and a faster winger, don't you? Whereas those two are both big and pretty fast. So I think, you know, maybe they feel they can get away a little bit with his defensive frailties there with those two. And they quite often put Marchant in the wing as well, don't they? So yeah. So it's almost like they've built the team a little bit to use him to his best.
Yeah.
Okay, so right, number two, you're going to accuse me of a home pick here, but I've got De Glanville.
I mean, that's ludicrous, Ben. He's not even the best fullback at Bath.
I genuinely think he is. I think he's a brilliant fullback. He's really good under the high ball, and he's defensively really sound. I think he's a good footballer, and I really rate him. I think if I was to pick a first 15 for Bath with everyone fit, I'd pick him at 15 and Watson on the wing. Mm. You know, I've got him higher than Piatow and Goode, because I started to think about value for money at the top of the order. So, you know, he's younger and at the moment not in the England squad. He has been in squads in the past because I believe he got in trouble during COVID with some senior players against Barbarians. But yeah, it's just a player I do rate, and it may be, you know, he plays for Bath, so I've seen a lot more of him. But I would say, you know, he probably broke into the side probably 6 months before Stewart did for Leicester. And until Stewart came along, I was like, well, that's the best young player under a high ball I've seen in a long time. And, you know, that's not to be sniffed at. And I do think he's definitely a sound, you know, sounded defence, and, you know, makes a lot of ground in attack as well. Have you seen much of him, Doug? Or
I've seen a few games of him. I've yet to see anything that justifies the hype, because there's a lot of hype.
So talking of hype,
yeah,
I've got number one. Anyone that's ever listened to this podcast will probably not be surprised that I've gone with Freddie Stewart. Without going too much into it, we've spoken about dominating in the air, and he is almost the dictionary definition of it. Usually he's coming from deep, gets off the ground early, and because he's so big, people just get out of the way. And you know, hands wise, he's as near to perfect as we've got and probably have had for a long time. You know, I've seen a try in the European game where he chased a kick, managed to get hold of it, and then used his size to offload out of a tackle. So that's an added bonus to his game. He's not the quickest, which as anyone who's seen me play will know I sympathise with. And that's probably his only real weakness is maybe a lack of outright pace. But, you know, reading the game should make up for that. And what he's in the team for is that ability in the air. And, you know, I think teams are already avoiding kicking at him.
Do you think, I mean, obviously there's a lot of kicking in the game at the moment. Do you think having someone like Stewart, who makes the opposition think about what they're doing with their kicking game, gives you an advantage? Or do you just think, well, teams just won't kick to him, or just, you know, kick someone else?
I think anytime you take an option away from the opposition, it's a bonus. And if that option is the box kick, which teams use so often, then, you know, that's even better. And, you know, even if it takes out a type of box kick, which is maybe the longer one the fullback comes for rather than the one that lands on top of the winger. But, you know, the other thing with a fullback is that if a fullback that solid is great for your team's forwards, because they know that they're not going to have to run back 50 metres for a scrum all the time. You know, it forwards love a dependable fullback, and I think, you know, that's a big advantage as well. And you can just commit your wingers a little bit more as well, with a very, you know, a solid presence at the back. I think it is a real bonus. And, you know, Australia had sort of, you know, a run of good fullbacks where, you know, they were good attackers, but also very solid under the high ball. And that helped them out a lot. And he's a little bit underrated in attack because of his size, he will make ground. You know, he's not like Goode, where, you know, he comes in to distribute, you know, in the fly half channel. You can use him as a second fly half, but, you know, he just hits that sort of old school fullback line outside the centres and takes a bit of stopping once the ball's got out that wide. I'm just his biggest fan. Chester.
You can have the tattoo's, yeah, coming, isn't it?
Yeah, the big tattoo on my stomach and the room with a Freddie Stewart dummy on the chair. It's all going on. So yeah, I'm going to stop talking because I've covered this a million times, and I think we've all seen it on the telly. So unless you want to be any more glowing than that,
mate, I've got nothing for you. I mean, the guy's as things stand, the best fullback we've got. I think there's a danger we're sort of building him up too much. He is fairly one-dimensional as a rugby player, and ultimately, if you're one-dimensional, it doesn't take a lot to work you out, and so teams will eventually work out what to do with Freddie Stewart. There'll be, I imagine, a lot of trying to manipulate him positionally. So obviously it'll work on that. But I think I think Freeman has the potential to be a better fullback than Stewart. I think he has more to his game.
I think the way maybe to negate Stewart a little bit is to let him catch it and then try and turn him over.
Yeah.
I think that's the way teams will do it. Yeah, I mean, the way I'm being careful of comparing myself to Freddie Stewart here. I don't want to do that. But the way I've always, because he's much better than me by probably 100 times. But the way I sort of see a fullback through having played there and being fairly old school, Stewart's my type of player. So I'm always probably going to fall on his side, and perhaps de Glanville falls into that category as well. Whereas, you know, someone like Green is perhaps the prime example here, where he's still a fantastic rugby player, but he's, you know, the things that I would prioritise when assessing a fullback, where he falls down a little bit. He's you know, an absolutely wonderful attacking threat, but, you know, in my head, the defensive weakness is way heavier than perhaps in someone else's, you know. And I think maybe that's, you know, you probably are looking at the attacking with a bit more weight.
Yeah, probably.
And you know, and it would depend who takes over as England coach, where they might fall on that. You know, if it came to a 50-50 between Freeman and Stewart and Warren Gatland was in charge, well, we know where he would go. But, you know, like you say, if Boyd or someone like that was in charge, then you might see a different result.
Yeah. Yeah.
So we've talked through my top 10, and I think we've probably mentioned all the players in both our top 10. So mine was Brown, Parton, James, Malins, Watson, Hogg, Goode, Piatow, De Glanville and Stewart. So what was yours? Just to get it on record, Doug?
From 10, then Piatow, Hogg, Watson, Brown, Freeman, Moyle is the only one we haven't spoken about.
Okay.
And now he's there basically because he's Premiership through and through and plays every game and he's just there. I've never seen him let Gloucester down. He pops up with tries. He's just a solid player. Now, it doesn't mean that I think he's in international class, but I think in terms of, you know, ranking the Premiership fullbacks, I think there's a lot of weight to that. So, and then top four, Parton, Green, Goode and Stewart.
So there's some clubs there that haven't got one in either of our lists.
Well,
so,
there's 13 clubs, so.
Yeah, well, that's true. So Wasps is the one that springs to mind.
Yeah, because they've got old man Miller and the worst player in the Premiership.
Yeah. we've all seen him defend. And Miller's been a solid player that's always done his job, but, you know, maybe another one whose time's passed. You know, and as we say, there's some clubs where there's maybe not a clear number two. So I don't know. I don't know what conclusion we've drawn here. I think perhaps nearly all the names that we've come up with are out and out fullbacks. I don't think many of the bits and pieces players have made their way in there. So I think maybe our podcast favourite Eddie Jones might need to take that in on board. You know, I think he has now, but for a long time he was
famous
maybe
for taking other people's opinions on board.
Yeah. I mean he's a listener, I'm sure, but yeah. So I think we've probably talked about that long enough. I hope I haven't gone on too much, as I promised I would. You got anything you wanted to say about fullbacks, Doug?
No,
I think we've said enough. So
yeah.
Do you have any other business?
I watched the season finale of Severed on Apple TV. Severance, sorry, on Apple TV. And it was absolutely phenomenal. One of the best series of television I've ever watched. So there you go.
What's that about, mate?
I wouldn't say dystopian, but it's sort of set in the near future about people who get an implant in their heads and they go to work and they forget about their outside life. So their work life and their home life are completely separate. And intrigue and subterfuge ensue.
Dystopian.
Not quite dystopian. I don't think, because it's not dystopian at all, really. But it's worth a watch. Definitely worth a watch. And, you know, winning time as well.
Cool. So I've already told Doug this, but we were invited to a party where there was a marquee in a field and it was suggested we could all camp. So we took a tent and slept in the tent, and it was cold when we went to bed. And when we woke up, the tent was actually frozen, and the beer keg in the marquee was dripping, and the drips had actually frozen all the way down to the ground. And I've never been so cold in my life. So, so that's first and possibly last time camping for me. But yeah, happy birthday to Georgie, who won't be listening. But yeah, the camping was a rash move.
Yeah. Wait for July and August for that.
Yeah, for sure. Right, so a little bit different to normal, probably a lot more dull. Russ has taken a little bit of time off from shouting at people at Twitter to go on holiday.
Just shouting at Americans now.
Yeah. Oh, God, he will be as well, won't he?
Yeah. I shouted at a woman in a coffee shop this morning.
For?
Letting a dog lick my ankles.
Yeah, that's not on, is it?
No, it was obviously a puppy, but it was like, I said to her, can you just stop letting your dog lick my ankles? Oh, it's only a puppy. I don't care. How would you like it if I came up to you and licked your ankles in a coffee shop?
Or licked a dog.
Yeah. I mean, it's just there seems to be like this new thing now where people think that their dog is the cutest thing in the world. It's like other people's kids. I just don't care about your dog.
As perhaps Corbel's number one culprit for that, I'm going to keep quiet. Vegas, there must be some good buffets in Vegas, right?
Oh, he'll be getting stuck in. I've absolutely no doubt about that. He'll be getting wedged right in.
Be like that episode of The Simpsons where he...
Lisa, not the steam trays. Fuck off.
So after some half-hearted Russ baiting, I think we'll call that a night. And hopefully everyone enjoyed it. Give us some feedback on Twitter, and we'll see you in, well, hopefully next week. We'll see. Go well.
Sports Social Podcast Network.